aspect of Cofield and Company.
The workout was first reported by Albert Breer, who added that the staff would then head to work out Ohio State signal caller Dwayne Haskins. Now, wait a second. Didn't the Raiders say that Derek Carr is their guy? Why are they working out Kyler Murray? Why are they working out Dwayne Haskins? Huh.
Good questions from Doug Gottlieb. We have some questions. Did the Raiders really just send home all their scouts because they don't trust them? That's what Ian Rappaport tweeted today. It took off. I saw Gelkin from the RJ write something much different. Paul Gutierrez covers the Raiders, is around them, you know, 300-plus days a year, so I'm sure he has the true story on this. Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Except I got to correct something you said at the top there. The only person who reported initially, quote-unquote, that the Raiders were going to work out Murray and Haskins was John Gruden himself. He said it at breakfast at the owners' meetings in March. So the reason they're doing that is they're simply doing their due diligence. They'd be silly to not go work guys out, especially with Gruden being the quote-unquote quarterback whisperer that's out there. And it puts a little bit of fire under Derek Carr's feet, but he's still getting paid $125 million. He's still their mister right now. And you just kind of go forward from there. I mean, it's interesting to see what's going on now with the scouts, because the way I look at it is it's much ado about nothing, because a lot of these scouts are not coming back anyway.
Right.
Mike Mayock spoke last week about how he and John wanted to do a couple dry runs, do some fire drills, so to speak, about what the draft night's going to be like, where guys are calling in and offering trades and wanting to trade up, trade down. Do we just stay still? You know, they want to see how they reacted once they got on the clock. So it's not surprising to me that this is happening. It's surprising to me that it's such a big story. But then again, John Gruden burps, and you want to know what he had for lunch. So anything that guy does is newsworthy. So the fact that these guys are leaving, oh, yeah, it's also a holiday weekend. So happy Easter and spend time with your families, scouts.
So do Gruden and Mayock trust you?
I'll put it this way. Mayock has not responded to a single text from me since he got the job. But Gruden, every now and again, we'll go back and forth. And we were talking college hoops a couple weeks ago, and he thinks college basketball was ruined by the 3-point shot and the shot clock. So
what?
I'm like, well, you're just too old school, dude. But then again, I had to remember that he was a ball boy for Bobby Knight back in the day. So
that's worse than the silliness around the scouts being sent home. That whole, he doesn't like the 3-point shot.
Exactly.
Gruden,
and I mean, I just scoop myself. I don't know if I was supposed to tell that, but yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, you know, we can have conversations like that, but I think I'm still working my way out around Mayock. But Gruden, I think he looks at me kind of crazy, too, sometimes because of the former he used to be at ESPN, so there's that connection there as well.
Could you, just so before we even get anywhere further on this, could you tell people the last retweet you sent, which was very insightful into how much Mayock trusts anybody?
Which one was that?
The Lee Mayock tweet.
Hey, his daughter.
Oh, yeah, where she says, you know, I'm trying to remember exactly. Yeah. Did she say that he left it for her when he went to the bathroom,
no,
or that he took it with him when he went to the bathroom?
Took it with him
twice. Wouldn't even leave it. Yeah,
he
wouldn't even leave it in front of his own blood, so scouts don't take any offense. And that makes sense. I mean, yeah, that's what Bill Belichick has made a career of doing, all the cloak and dagger stuff, and I'm so important, and blah, blah, blah. He's won some Super Bowls, had a lot of help along the way, but, I mean, it's just, that's what it is. It's all part of the dog and pony show, the pageantry, the smoke and mirrors.
By the way, this is not unusual, because Gil Brandt, who, you know, what is it? I drafted like 15 of the 19 guys in the Ring of Honor with the Cowboys. He said back like 40 years ago, they actually tried to set up some of the scouts in the room to see who the snitch was, and they kept talking about it. I think it was Trey Junkin over and over and over again, and just to plant it. And then 2 days later, one of the reporters locally is like, "Yep, they're taking Trey Junkin." He's like, "We didn't like him. We did it on purpose."
Wow. Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, if they're going to plan it out there, but it seems like it's wasted energy anyway to do something like that. But it also makes sense. If you really want to smoke them out, that would be a way to do it. I think there's some of that to this, but I also think that it's just, look, Mike Mayock and John Gruden are trying to establish their own relationship. They're still feeling each other out, and this is their first draft together. So, and it's Mike Mayock's first real draft after 2 decades being, you know, playing make-believe on TV doing it. So there's a lot at stake here.
Do you think they trust each other?
Yeah, I do. I do. I, you know, and here's the thing is that, you know, I wrote an article today about Mike and looking at some of his previous mock drafts and how he rated some of the Raider draft picks along the way. And this is going to be the first time he's doing it for real. But keep in mind that John Gruden has final say on all this. And Mike himself said, you know what, I'm fine with that. I knew that when I took the job. And if we don't hit on these draft picks and if we lose, I'm going to get fired, and I'm fine with that. So that's kind of the mindset there as far as the trust level with each other. And I think, you know, I did a radio show in L.A. about half an hour or so ago, and they asked me what people in the Bay Area were thinking of Mike Mayock, because he's kind of this TV star persona. You know, at least Gruden was a coach before he became a TV star. But Mayock, he's the yin to Gruden's yang. He's the calming influence to Gruden's passion and his fervor and his ferociousness and everything. So they play off each other. He's kind of the Mr. Iceman to Gruden's fire monster, so fire breathing dragon, so to speak.
Solid. You pulled that one out. That's impressive.
I was trying.
So, I mean, I guess it's going to be tough for us to figure out exactly what they're thinking and where they're going, but what is your best sense of what their plan is?
Yeah, so here's the interesting thing about this, guys, is we at NFL Nation, there's 32 of us for ESPN that cover all 32 teams, and we have our own mock draft, and we just finished that up this morning. No spoilers, but we have our own TV show, so on Tuesday night, so tune in, and we all walk up to the podium, and we make the picks as if we're representing the teams, and we're supposed to pick as if we know where the teams are going. So the way I look at it right now, I can't tell you who I picked, but I will tell you this, that the way the board is stacking up, if Quinnen Williams is there, I think he's their guy. I think they love him. And that's kind of makes little sense, because the absolute need is an edge rusher. And if Josh Allen is still there, he would seem to be the pick, right? Well, I'm not sure they're so much in love with him as they are Quinnen Williams from Alabama, who might be the best overall prospect in the entire draft. So, you know, they have so many holes. I asked Tom Flores this a long time ago, you know, the Super Bowl winning coach of the Raiders, and I said, you know, what's the difference between drafting for need and drafting best player available? And he said, well, if you're drafting in the top 10, that means you're pretty bad, and you don't have the luxury of drafting for a specific need, because you got needs all over the place, and that's what you see with the Raiders right now. Yeah, they do have 8 picks, but 4 of them come in the top 35, and then they have this huge gap in the middle between 36 and 105 where they don't select. So they need a lot of things all over the place, but they need somebody to help affect that pass rush.
If Kyler Murray doesn't go 1, 2, or 3, does that mean everything changes for the Raiders?
I think so, but not in the way you might expect. I mean, I could totally be wrong here, and with John Gruden, you never really know what he's thinking at any time of the day anyway. But if Murray's there and there's a team behind them that really, really likes him, I think that's where you see the Raiders strike and trade back. Because Mayock was lamenting the fact the other day that they have no picks between 36 and 105. So if they could swap that pick and only go down a few spots to, say, the Giants, the Dolphins, the Bengals, then they're picking up more spots later, and they could still get some sort of a pass rusher by trading down a few spots. And I think a lot of that is the smoke and mirrors with Kyler Murray. Is he's never really come out and said that he loves him. It's all been inferred since the Senior Bowl, when he just talked about how small quarterbacks, short quarterbacks, are not a bad thing anymore, because he points to Russell Wilson. So a lot of smoke and mirrors, a lot of gamesmanship. You know, and it really, if they don't go with a quarterback this year, they can still control the draft next year, because they have those 2 first-round picks, and they could go up and get the kid from Oregon if they really, truly wanted to next year going into Vegas.
You mentioned Miami at 13. After that, is that too far to go back?
Potentially. I think at that point, especially for that first pick, I think they could still do some things at 24 and 27 and 35, definitely. And, you know, the way our mock draft worked is we weren't allowed to do any trades. And yet I still was able to address specific needs with guys that, you know, according to a lot of people, were the best players available. And that is the perfect marriage. I asked Mike Mayock the same thing, you know, about how fine that line is. And he said, as the son of a coach, coaches always want need, but you can't reach for need, because then you dilute the roster the rest of the way. You got to go for positions too.
So if Quinnen Williams isn't there, and you sort of hinted at the fact that they're not in love with Josh Allen, what do they do?
I think they love Ed Oliver from Houston.
Really?
He's a prototypical Raider right now. I mean, he's such a freaky athlete. I think he could play anywhere along the line. And I'm not trying to put any pressure on him whatsoever, but his skill set a little bit reminds me of Howie Long. Because Howie, remember, could play nose. He could play defensive tackle. He could play the end. Granted, the Raiders were running a 3-4 back then, and the league was a lot smaller in terms of the monsters that are on the offensive line. But he's such an athlete, and I think that if Quinnen Williams is there, I think he's the guy. But if Ed Oliver is there, I think he's the guy, especially over Josh Allen. I just do not think they're really all that sold on Josh Allen. And it seems strange, considering Josh Allen had more sacks in college last year than the Raiders did as a team in the NFL.
Well, it's funny with these mock drafts, and we're talking to Paul Gutierrez, Raiders insider for ESPN, because so many times the mock drafts kind of build on each other, and I think people copy each other, and we keep hearing and seeing and reading, you know, Josh Allen, Khalil Mack. I mean, it's obvious. It's an obvious connection. Yeah. He goes right into that position, and you're telling us, yeah, it doesn't have to be that way.
Here's the reason, and the reason being is that the Raiders with Paul Gunther as a defensive coordinator are very much, they're a scheme team. And they're a strict 4-3 scheme. They need their defensive end to have their hand in the ground. Josh Allen never really played like that. He was a 3-4 kind of a rover out there, outside linebacker who would drop back into coverage. How many times did you really see Khalil Mack drop back into coverage? I think that is the big difference there. I'd have a hard time not picking him without telling you guys who I actually did pick. But it's Josh Allen, and yet you look at it like, okay, well, he only did it for 1 year, and he was only motivated for 1 year. Well, you can make that case for anybody in the draft, right? I mean, Quinnen Williams, who knew who he was at this point a year ago? So it's a crapshoot, and that's what anybody will tell you. I mean, you know, going back to my conversation with Tom Flores, I mean, in 1982, when it came time for them to pick, half the room wanted Barry Redden. The other half wanted some Heisman Trophy winner from USC, and thank goodness for Raider fans that sanity proved out and they drafted Marcus Allen.
Good pick. Any chance they package two first to try to get Khalil Mack?
Please come back.
Only if they go get A.J. McCarron, too.
There you go.
Oh, boy. It reminded me because I saw the schedule pop out, but what is that game going to be like this year when they play him?
Well, it's going to be in London. Yeah. So that's another thing that the NFL kind of stuck to the Raiders. You knew that was coming, though. You knew this back in January that was the game. And a year ago, when they were talking about having a game in Monterrey, Mexico, I thought that's where they were going to go with this, just to keep Khalil Mack away from Oakland. I think it's going to be interesting. I think he's going to, you know, to me, the way I'm looking at it as, you know, Derek Carr has always bragged and said that he was faster than Khalil Mack. Well, we'll see if he can escape him, if he's chasing him at the new soccer stadium at Tottenham. October 6th.
So tell people again, when does the draft come out? When do you reveal your pick for the Raiders?
We have, NFL, ESPN NFL Nation mock draft show is Tuesday, I want to say 4 p.m. Pacific. I know we're back in Bristol to do it, so I head out there late tomorrow night. So it's going to be fun. Well, all 32 of us are there. We have meetings, and we have our draft show, and it's a blast. We do it every year, and I think it's about our fourth or fifth year now that we've actually had the show where we got to walk up to the podium, have a spiel, and hope that Trey Wingo and the guys don't rip us.
We always like to close with a UNLV basketball question. So what do you think, Paul? UNLV went with the young guy, Otzelberger. Yeah. Reno landed Alford.
Yeah. I was not sold as an alum and as a fan, so to speak. I was not sold on Otzelberger at first. But then I kind of saw what he's doing, how he's ingraining himself in the community. He's out there ripping his rotator cuff, doing the siren at the Golden Knights game the other night. I'm kind of buying it. I'm seeing what he says because that's something that was missing. And that's not to say that Marvin was a bad guy or anything, but just there wasn't any excitement there. And, you know, Marvin's always been a recruiter anyway. So it's going to be interesting to see this. Now, you know, the one thing that Dave Rice said that will always stick with me is that UNLV transcends conference, and it still does, you know. And for him to be there and to do it, okay, cool. Alford, as a guy that was a huge fan of the 87 team, I could not see Alford being the coach at UNLV. That would be like going out and hiring Bobby Hurley or Christian Laettner.
You nailed it. Hey, Paul, have a good weekend. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Happy Easter.
Thanks, man.
There you go. Paul Gutierrez, ESPN, UNLV guy.